Welcome back to The Morning Brief, brought to you by America's largest independent newspaper, The Epoch Times. It's Friday, July 11th, and I'm Keegan Billings. Let's get right into today's stories. President Trump said he would be imposing a blanket 35% tariff on Canadian imports beginning August 1st. Meanwhile, a federal judge barred the Trump administration from enforcing the president's executive order limiting birthright citizenship. In more news, according to leaked audio, President Trump allegedly told a group of campaign donors at a fundraising event last year that he had separately warned the Russian and Chinese leaders that he would bomb their capitals if they invaded their neighbors. And on health, a hidden cause of migraines and blood pressure fluctuations may be a tyramine intolerance. But before we get started, I want to let you know this morning brief is also available in newsletter format. It's curated daily by the Epoch Times newsroom and arrives in your email inbox at 5 a.m. Our subscribers tell us we're their top source for unbiased news. So check the link in the notes. Now let's get back to our top story. President Trump said he'll be imposing a blanket 35% tariff on Canadian imports. The new tariff rate will start August 1st. Trump broke the news to Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney in a letter posted on Truth Social. Trump wrote, quote, "As you recall, the United States imposed tariffs on Canada to deal with our nation's fentanyl crisis, which is caused in part by Canada's failure to stop the drugs from pouring into our country." He added, quote, "Instead of working with the United States, Canada retaliated with its own tariffs. Starting August 1st, 2025, we will charge Canada a tariff of 35% on Canadian products sent into the United States, separate from all sectoral tariffs." Carney had earlier said that the two leaders agreed during the G7 summit to reach a new trade deal within 30 days. Then on June 27th, Trump said he would end all trade talks with Canada unless they removed the digital services tax. That tax would apply a 3% levy on revenue that tech companies receive in Canada. That means companies like Amazon, Google, Meta, Uber, and Airbnb will be hit with a 3% tax on revenue made from Canadian users. The tax had been a trade irritant for both the Biden and Trump administrations. Canada announced 2 days later that it would drop the tax, with Carney adding that the two countries are back on course to reach a new trade deal by July 21st. Early this year, Trump imposed a 25% tariff on both Mexico and Canada, accusing them of not doing enough to stop trafficking of fentanyl into the United States. When Trump announced baseline and reciprocal tariffs on most U.S. trading partners in early April, he said both nations would stay at 25% for the time being. Additionally, goods in line with the United States-Mexico-Canada agreement would not be subject to tariffs. Trump also levied sectoral tariffs on a number of specific Canadian products, including steel, lumber, copper, energy, and potash. The president said the blanket 35% tariff on Canadian imports would be separate from his sectoral tariffs. Now let's move over to politics. Yesterday, a federal judge blocked the Trump administration from enforcing the president's executive order limiting birthright citizenship. The ruling comes weeks after the Supreme Court restricted the capacity of judges to issue nationwide injunctions. District Judge Joseph LaPlante of the U.S. District Court for the District of New Hampshire announced his decision after an hour-long hearing and said a written order will follow. He said the order will include a 7-day stay to allow for appeal. According to reporters in the courtroom, the judge said, quote, "That's irreparable harm, citizenship alone. It is the greatest privilege that exists in the world." In January, President Trump issued the order ending automatic birthright citizenship to kids born in the U.S. to parents who are illegal immigrants. Multiple federal judges have issued injunctions against the order since it was issued, but the Supreme Court invalidated those previous court orders by ruling that lower courts cannot issue sweeping orders that block orders nationwide. LaPlante addressed this Supreme Court's order, saying in the July 10th hearing that previously he was the judge who wasn't comfortable with issuing a nationwide injunction, and that class action is different. He noted that his interpretation of the Supreme Court ruling suggested that class action is a better option. At issue is the Constitution's 14th Amendment, which states that all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States. The ruling is a response to a lawsuit brought by the American Civil Liberties Union and other plaintiffs, arguing that the executive order violates the Constitution's 14th Amendment and runs afoul of decades of jurisprudence over how to handle birthright citizenship. But lawyers for the Trump administration have argued that under that text, the United States can deny citizenship to children born of illegal immigrant women because of the line "subject to the jurisdiction thereof." On another topic, Mahmoud Khalil, the Columbia University graduate and pro-Palestinian activist who was detained for more than 3 months earlier this year, has filed a claim seeking $20 million in damages from the Trump administration. He alleges that he was falsely imprisoned, maliciously prosecuted, and publicly smeared as an anti-Semite as part of a politically motivated effort to silence his activism. This is the guy who was a prominent spokesperson for student protesters at Columbia University, who opposed Israel's military operations in Gaza. According to the Associated Press, the filing is a precursor to a potential federal lawsuit under the Federal Tort Claims Act, which allows individuals to pursue damages for harm caused by federal officials acting unlawfully. Khalil told the outlet that instead of getting money for the damages, he would accept an official apology and for the administration to abandon policies that he alleges targets pro-Palestinian speech. Responding to questions about Khalil's accusations, DHS Assistant Secretary Tricia McLaughlin accused Khalil of making himself an anti-Semite through his actions. McLaughlin told the Epoch Times, quote, "Mahmoud Khalil's claim that DHS officials branded him as an anti-Semite and terrorized him and his family is absurd. It was Khalil who terrorized Jewish students on campus. He branded himself as anti-Semite through his own hateful behavior and rhetoric." McLaughlin added that receiving a visa or green card to live and study in the United States is a privilege, and that the Trump administration acted well within its statutory and constitutional authority to detain Khalil, as it does with any alien who advocates for violence, glorifies and supports terrorists, harasses Jews, and damages property. Meanwhile, Khalil's legal battle over his deportation continues in federal court. On July 9th, Khalil's lawyers filed a motion in U.S. District Court in New Jersey seeking to block the Trump administration from deporting him on what he alleged is a retaliatory new immigration charge. Now let's move on to Capitol Hill. A group of centrist House Democrats warned that rising power demand and recent policy changes could threaten the grid's reliability and drive up costs unless Congress acts to modernize the country's energy system. The new Democrat coalition released a framework on July 9th, laying out steps to expand clean energy, strengthen transmission infrastructure, and speed up federal permitting. The announcement follows the passage of the Republican-backed budget bill that repeals clean energy tax credits enacted under the Inflation Reduction Act. The mega bill will end or phase out credits for home solar, batteries, heat pumps, electric vehicles, and large-scale wind and solar projects. Democrat Rep. Scott Peters from California, who leads the coalition's Environment, Climate, and Clean Energy Working Group, said the country faces a massive increase in demand and needs to respond urgently. Peters said, quote, "For the first time in decades, America faces a massive increase in energy demand due to AI data centers, onshoring manufacturing, and the electrification of our economy. We need affordable power, good-paying jobs, and reliable service. Abundant clean energy is the answer." Peters said the GOP mega bill incentivizes outdated and expensive fossil fuels like coal, and that taking cheap and easily deployable clean energy offline increases the chance of blackouts along with higher energy bills. The White House said in a July 7th executive order that the rollback is the policy of the United States to rapidly eliminate the market distortions and costs imposed on taxpayers by so-called green energy subsidies. The order stated that wind and solar energy are expensive and unreliable, displace affordable dispatchable power, and create dependencies on supply chains controlled by foreign adversaries. While many Republicans support the rollback as a way to reduce federal spending, some more moderate GOP senators from states with expanding wind and solar industries, including John Curtis from Utah and Lisa Murkowski from Alaska, warned that ending the credits would threaten employment and energy investments. Now let's move on to U.S. news. We have another story about the tragic flood in Texas. As the rain fell, the Guadalupe River rose rapidly in the darkness before the July 4th dawn, swelling into a monster that swallowed everything in its path. It indiscriminately claimed the lives of little girls at Christian camps, elderly couples in RVs, and lifelong residents along the river. According to local officials, more than 100 people, including 36 children, are dead in Kerr County alone, with more than 160 people still missing. But even in the darkest of moments, when hope faded for many, small victories played out in the neighborhoods around Kerrville, a Texas town of 25,000 souls. Kerrville officer Jonathan Lamb shared the story of how a police officer saw dozens of people stranded on roofs and waded out to bring them to safety. Another officer who was off duty tied a garden hose around his waist so he could reach two people holding onto a tree above raging waters. Likewise, neighbors were saving neighbors. A miraculous turn of events played out behind the property of Kerrville resident Doug Robertson, which is perched about 30 feet above the river. Robertson, who runs a landscaping business, kept hearing police sirens on his way to work early in the morning. He said he saw the police cars and noticed that a nearby park was closed, so he checked the backyard behind the property and saw the water. Robertson said he called his wife and told her to wake up his sons, who were visiting for the holiday. When they arrived along with his landscaping crew, they started moving backyard furniture to higher ground. That's when they heard a faint cry for help. Robertson could hardly believe his eyes when he spotted a man, perhaps in his 40s, clinging to the backyard fence behind his wife's office, stripped of clothing, barely able to call for help as the water rose rapidly, yelling for help. Robertson told the Epoch Times that the man was in shock and couldn't move. He got washed off the bridge in his car. He said, "It tells you how powerful that water was." Robertson's son Ryan, who is 6 feet 4 inches tall and weighs 215 pounds, tied a rope around his waist and waded out toward the man as the others anchored the rope, ready to drag them back to safety. Robertson said, quote, "I'm yelling at him to jump over. It's just pouring up and behind him. It is roaring like you cannot even believe." The man then jumped into the water and Ryan grabbed him as the workers tugged on the rope. At one point, both men went underwater, but they popped back up before being pulled to safety. The man didn't appear to be injured, but Ryan took him to the hospital to get checked out. No one actually got the man's name during the adrenaline-fueled rescue. They never heard anything more about the victim or his ordeal. Robertson said he has lived in the area since 1969 and has never seen anything like the flooding they witnessed that morning. But to save just one person amid so much despair was important. Robertson said, quote, "It makes you darn grateful. It is a story of light and a lot of devastation." Now we're going to move on to more U.S. news. On another topic, the Department of Justice filed a lawsuit against California over its state laws on production of eggs and poultry products. They allege that the laws impose burdensome red tape on the industry and have the effect of raising egg prices for Americans nationwide. The lawsuit filed at the District Court for the Central District of Columbia reads, quote, "Through a combination of voter initiatives, legislative enactments, and regulations, California has effectively prevented farmers across the country from using a number of agricultural production methods which were in widespread use and which helped keep eggs affordable." The lawsuit mentions three California laws as problematic. That's Proposition 2, AB 1437, and Proposition 12. Proposition 2 amended the California Health and Safety Code, prescribing housing conditions for farm animals such as egg-laying hens. AB 1437 added more sections on this issue to the safety code. According to the lawsuit, Proposition 2 and AB 1437 caused a sharp decrease in egg production in California. Proposition 12 further added or amended egg standards and animal housing requirements. According to the California State Government website, California regulations require veal calves, breeding pigs, and egg-laying hens to be housed in systems that comply with specific standards for freedom of movement, cage-free design, and specified minimum floor space. These regulations also prohibit a farm owner or operator from knowingly confining these specific animals in a cruel manner. By the way, if you're enjoying the Morning Brief, please take a moment and hit the follow button. We publish Monday through Friday. It's a concise report directly from the Epoch Times editorial desk. We do it with depth and facts from both sides. That way you get to make up your own opinion. Now we're going to move on to world news. According to a leaked audio, President Trump allegedly told a group of campaign donors at a fundraising event last year that he had separately warned the Russian and Chinese leaders that he would bomb their capitals if they invaded their neighbors. The audio published by CNN on July 8th allegedly captures Trump's remarks at a private fundraiser during the 2024 presidential election. He was recounting conversations he had with Russian President Vladimir Putin and Chinese regime leader Xi Jinping. It is unclear when the conversations took place. Russia invaded Ukraine after Trump left office and months before he launched his 2024 presidential campaign. According to the audio, Trump could be heard saying, quote, "With Putin, I said, if you go into Ukraine, I'm going to bomb the expletive out of Moscow. I'm telling you, I have no choice." And then Putin goes like, "I don't believe you," but he believed me 10%. Also, according to the audio, Trump later added that he had gave a similar warning to Xi over a potential Chinese invasion of Taiwan, the self-governing island that the CCP claims as part of its territory. According to the audio, Trump said, quote, "Then I'm with President Xi of China. I said the same thing to them. I said, you know, if you go into Taiwan, I'm gonna bomb the expletive out of Beijing." He thought I was crazy. He said, Beijing? You're going to bomb Beijing? I said, I have no choice. I got to bomb you. And Xi didn't believe me either. He said 10%, and 10% is all you need. In fact, 5% would have been okay too. Trump also commented about his relationship with Xi, saying, according to the audio, we never had a problem. We would never have had a problem. The audio was obtained by journalists Josh Dossi, Tyler Pager, and Isaac Arnsdorf, who described the exchange in their book 2024, How Trump Retook the White House and the Democrats Lost America, which was released earlier this week. Yeah, so this source is leaked audio. As I said earlier, the audio was published by CNN, so I guess you can just take it for what it is. Now let's move on to more world news. Secretary of State Marco Rubio held a surprise meeting with Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov yesterday. He told him about President Trump's growing frustration with the lack of progress in peace negotiations to end the war with Ukraine. Speaking with reporters on the sidelines of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations Summit, Rubio described his Thursday meeting with Lavrov as a frank conversation. Rubio said, quote, I echoed what the president has said, of both a disappointment and frustration of the lack of progress in peace talks or in a path forward. Despite ramping up support for Ukraine and talk of new sanctions on Russia, Rubio said the Trump administration still wishes to pursue diplomacy between all parties in the conflict. Rubio said, quote, We shared some ideas and comments, which I'll take back to Washington as early as this evening in terms of calls. Perhaps there's something to build on there. Rubio said the Russian side has begun to articulate some new ideas for a way to resolve the ongoing Ukraine conflict. He said he wouldn't characterize it as something that guarantees a peace, but it's a concept that he can take back to the president, he said. The Secretary of State did not share the specifics about that new approach the Russian side had articulated during the Thursday meeting. Now let's move on to another topic. Popular video sharing app TikTok is under a fresh investigation by its main regulator in the European Union over user data storage in China. Ireland's Data Protection Commission announced that it is investigating TikTok's transfer of European users' data to servers within China. TikTok, which is owned by the Beijing-based ByteDance, registered its EU headquarters in Ireland, making the Irish privacy watchdog the lead supervisory authority over the company within the EU. The latest probe came just weeks after TikTok was hit by a fine of $620 million. The decision is a result of a four-year investigation by Irish regulators, who determined that TikTok violated the EU's strict general data protection regulation by sending user data back to China. During the earlier investigation, TikTok maintained that personal data was not stored on servers located within China, but could only be accessed by TikTok staff in China remotely. If you ask me, I don't see how that's any better. Whether they're sending it back to China or that China can actually access it seems similar to me. However, in April, according to the statement, regulators learned from TikTok that limited European user data had in fact been stored on servers in China, contrary to the evidence the company had previously presented. In their previous decision, Irish regulators expressed deep concern that TikTok had submitted inaccurate information. After consulting with other data protection commissions in the EU, the regulators decided to initiate this new investigation into TikTok. Now I'm going to hand it over to Helen with health.
Thanks, Keegan. Hi, folks. I'm Helen Billings, back with our health section. Today, I'll be talking about tyramine intolerance, a hidden cause of migraines and blood pressure fluctuations. At age 45, Zoe thought she knew her body until she was blindsided by sudden episodes of a racing heart and overwhelming anxiety. She initially blamed it on work stress. She'd only eaten a slice of pepperoni pizza and a banana earlier that day. However, when a pounding headache struck just hours after dinner of her usual comfort food of cheesy pasta and a glass of red wine, she began to suspect a food connection, especially since the symptoms returned after repeating the same meal the next night. Zoe went searching for answers in the nutrition world. She discovered she was reacting to high levels of tyramine, a natural compound found in cheddar, aged cheeses like Parmesan, cured meats, red wine, beer, and sauerkraut. So for me, I know it would be hard to stay away from some of those foods if I had to, being Italian. Yeah, like right now I have some of that good Parmesan cheese from Italy and prosciutto in my fridge. But if I had to, I would, because I know my health comes first. Well, back to the story. Tyramine sensitivity occurs when the body cannot properly break down tyramine due to low levels of the enzyme monoamine oxidase A. This enzyme deficiency can trigger symptoms like blood pressure spikes, heart palpitations, nausea, migraines, and anxiety. Low levels of this enzyme can be caused by genetics or medications. Chronic migraines are also common. Symptoms typically appear 1 to 12 hours after eating high tyramine foods. To determine whether tyramine sensitivity is causing you discomfort, start by tracking your symptoms and diet. This compound can accumulate if you're unknowingly consuming tyramine-rich foods. Research shows that awareness is powerful when it comes to food sensitivities and intolerances.
Thanks for that, Helen. And before we leave, here are some words of wisdom to start the day. Today's quote is by Zhuang Zhou, the Taoist philosopher. He writes, quote, "Everyone in the world knows how to seek for knowledge that they do not have, but do not know how to find what they already know." And that's it for me here. Thanks for listening to the Epoch Times Morning Brief. I'm Keegan. I'll see you on Monday and have a good rest of your day.